All right. Good afternoon. It's approximately 1:30, February 7th, 2011. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're meeting here in the commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the state capitol. We're meeting to discuss Montana-Dakota Utility Company's electric rate increase application, case number PU-10-124. The commission had previously held a work session on this and had a number of requests for staff to put together some information for us, and they have done that, so this is our opportunity to discuss that. My name is Tony Clark, and with me are my fellow commissioners, Kevin Kramer and Brian Kalk. In addition, we have a number of members of staff here. Being that this is just an opportunity for the staff and commission to talk amongst itself, why don't we have, for anyone who may be listening in, the staff identify themselves. Staff at the table.
Patrick Fahn, commission staff.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, commission staff.
Mark Grumman, commission staff.
Chris Morrell, commission staff.
We also have in the audience Mike Diller, who is advocacy staff, and Rita Mulkern from Montana Dakota Utilities. With that, should we start with the discussion points? I guess, Brian, this is in your portfolio, so if you have a particular way you want to handle this, let us know. But I was thinking maybe we'd just go over the
makes sense
document
to me
that was handed out. Okay.
Read through the document, obviously, but there'd be a lot of, be nice to hear staff walk through the explanation, I guess.
Okay. Who wants to do the lead on that?
I can start out. Okay. I guess just starting out, if you want to go through each point on the discussion points and talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think so.
The first point that we have here is the request we spell out is for $8,825,000. It's a 7.7% increase. And we identified some dollars for each component. Mark identified these out of the proceeding. The settlement is worth about $500,000. Incentive compensation is worth $1.1 million. And the issue of board of directors expenses is worth $70,000 approximately. And the wind generation, the Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow wind projects represent $7.1 million of the requested increase. And point number two is that the advocacy staff, the PSC advocacy staff, had advocated that the revenue request be reduced by expenses related to Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow, and 60% reduction of the expenses related to the employee incentive compensation plan, and a 50% reduction in the expenses related to the board of directors' fees and expenses. Point number three, burden of proof. There was a lot of discussion in the post-hearing briefs about burden of proof. And I think at this point I would go to Mark or Ilana.
Well, I guess under burden of production, I essentially just put in a definition from Black's Law Dictionary, so I don't know how much that flushes out that issue. But obviously the burden of production and the whole burden shifting. Also, burden of production is also known as burden of going forward, which I believe it's referenced both ways in each brief. And then the burden of persuasion, which is the preponderance standard.
Okay.
Has there been any kind of movement between what the MDU requests and the advocacy staff requests? Have you heard anything at all about any of that, changes to the settlement agreement or anything since we last spoke?
Since the last work session
for us.
For us, we haven't heard a thing.
Okay.
From advocacy staff.
Or anybody else. I haven't.
The bullet discussion point number four is the recovery of wind generation. So we're getting into we believe the real issues here. Diamond Willow was one of the wind projects included in the investment requested. Questions we want to address are, is it used? And there's testimony and pre-filed testimony that it is producing electricity and it is providing it into their integrated system. It's in operation. Useful. Number two there, is it useful, prudent? And we have provided handouts to help answer the question. One of the handouts is the order that required MDU to file integrated resource plans. We also have a part of the order that gave advanced determination of prudence for the Big Stone 2 plant. And you'll see some highlighting that I've done on that order for some discussion that I thought was pertinent to the commission's consideration. And we've also provided a handout that summarizes Chris's IRP reviews. I don't know if you want to go into a discussion about those items now or you want to just continue on.
Well, for me, if you just maybe hit the next one and we'll see. We can maybe have the wind discussion in one group.
Once you've determined that an investment is used and useful or prudent, then the third question for any investment is the valuation of the investment. How much of that investment should be included in rate base, and how much of the operating expense associated with that would be included?
That's the difficult part about the Diamond Willow plant, because that's where the record is not. It's tougher to pick the right number. I mean, you're right, it's producing power. It's being used. But prudency is tougher, and then identifying a dollar value. And ultimately, is our responsibility to identify a dollar value, or do we have the option of saying,
folks
have to provide something for us? I mean, but
I think it was like your point in the previous work session about why they should be able to come to us exactly what North Dakota customers benefit from this and defend that point and answer it, and that was never something that was clearly defined.
Well, I look at it like those pipeline cases. I can't remember which one, but the idea that the commission, I think in those cases, couldn't just say we exclude everything. I mean, you can't recover a thing from ratepayers. But they said no. But it would be okay for the commission to say there's a portion of this which is imprudent, and here's how you identify that. That's what to me is difficult to arrive at that amount, because you've got MDU on one side saying no, it's all prudent. Has to all be included. You've got staff on the other side saying it's not prudent. Don't include any of it. So how do you get to that number?
Well, and
ultimately, what burden falls on us to determine that in the lack of, if the record itself has that absence of fact?
It's the fundamental question, and I mean, I've since been reading all, and you guys did a great job, by the way, both with
this was very, very good.
The issues and the research and the availability of some of this research, and Chris, your IRP work is all very helpful in helping me summarize things, but I'm like Tony, I still come down to the same question, and quite honestly, where I, unless somebody can convince me otherwise, first of all, I don't think Diamond Willow was, while it was used, it wasn't built for us. It was, in my mind, clearly built completely for somebody else. That doesn't mean it's not used. I get it. And maybe it means there's some increment of it that's useful. But I struggle with how it's my responsibility to determine what that is, or to even keep the case open until somebody informs me better. When the only people that brought the case are the company. And so, I mean, I'm still of the mind to reject it unless somebody can tell me some legal reason why I'm not allowed to do that.
I think that's where I was the work session before, the same point. Based on the additional time that you folks had, I mean, have you come up with an answer to that question of, okay, if it's not zero, then what could it be? Or is it just zero, the arguments back and forth? Is that ultimately, I guess, the legal question?
I look at this similar to when we've done other prudency cases, whether they're an advanced prudency or this, which is a an ex post prudency. Sure. And okay, you use say Big Stone for an example, or any other wind project that's brought to us is in terms of a prudency. Typically, the company will say, here are the different options we had in front of us. We felt that, either you go, whatever. But it could be wind, it could be coal. But they price out all these different options for you. Right. Here, it's more like the company said, okay, we need wind because we're going to diversify the portfolio, which might be okay, right? I mean, there might be other, but you'd still need to compare it next to something else, which we're kind of missing that piece. And then, but even beyond that, once the decision was made to go wind, then it was automatically, well, it's going to be Montana wind, and that, so you had to go so far down the procurement process that it was, it's even tough to know if they picked the right wind resource if you were going to go with wind, which is far afield from how any other prudency that I've seen was done, where it was just much more systematic.
I don't mean to jump ahead either, but staff is thinking about the same issues with Cedar Hills. It's the same thing. What is the valuation? Same question.
It is. It's difficult, and I was kind of struggling with this as well a little bit because that same, the same problems and philosophical issues that exist with Diamond Willow exist with Cedar Hills as far as that goes. It was not as rigorous a procurement process or cost analysis as was done in any other prudency we've done. To me, the difference is that there is that PCNN hanging out there.
Right.
And if not for that, or if we had, maybe thought of these issues at the time of the PCNN, or if this had been fully developed by staff at that time, or if another intervener came in the PCNN phase, I think we would have crossed that. But maybe then, and those would have all been important facts to consider in terms of that case. But that case was never made before the commission.
But then on the useful/prudence question, though, that the burden issue, the being on us, or the presumed prudence, that becomes a little tougher standard, too, where we don't have that in the Diamond Willow one. That in addition to the PCNN sort of haunts me. Other than the questions are still the same.
Well, as we thought through the PCNN for Cedar Hills, we thought, okay, what does the PCNN do? What does it do? Which of these questions does it answer? And, staff concludes that it answers the useful.
Right.
Not necessarily the use, but that was answered, when they came to the rate case.
Prudency.
But it doesn't answer the valuation question either.
Yeah.
No, that's right.
Good point.
That's right.
That's a nice way of thinking of this, too. Used, useful, valued the property. The CPNN answers one of those three, but not the other two.
Well, how about
it's actually a very tidy way of thinking. Mm-hmm.
Mark and I spent some time, and I'm sure you gentlemen did, too, with folks individually, but talking through some of this. But give me the legal point back about, let's suppose we ended up with, zero for Diamond Willow and something for Cedar Hills because there was a PCNN issued. How could you defend that legally without a model of how we got to those numbers?
I understand. Just to make sure I understand the question. So we would allow Cedar Hills, but we would disallow Diamond Willow?
Right.
That's the question.
And based on the fact that allowing Cedar Hills because the PCNN was issued, but how do we get to that dollar amount of what would be the right?
Oh, the actual quantified amount out of that $7 million?
Yes.
Yeah, did we ever have that specific conversation? I can't remember about a specific dollar amount.
So how much was Cedar Hills? How much was
I don't think, I think that's one thing we didn't anticipate, to be honest.
Okay.
We
never got that.
So I'm
well, that'd be a question for the next work session, for me personally anyway.
Right.
I mean, that's the road I'm going down right now, and I, unless absence of a, there's not a legal argument to back that or some overwhelming thing I'm missing, that's what I think.
We also have the objective, which I don't know how much weight that has, because the other criteria still apply, even with the objective. There's supposed to be a, you know,
economic. I think the objective is tough to put in because it's not, the objective itself is agnostic to whether it's in-state wind or out-of-state wind.
Right, or whether it's wind at all.
or whether it's wind, yeah, right.
Yeah, excellent point.
So, plus I would hesitate getting the objective in because I just don't know how much weight to put on it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to say something about what you were just commenting, but I'll skip on to the next thought. The other thing that the staff ran across, you know, and it was a surprise to us, but it shouldn't have been because it was mentioned in a couple of times in the briefs and everything, is that Diamond Willow, you know, was in operation before we issued the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity for Cedar Hills. And so we're thinking about that, and we're going,
say that one more time.
Diamond Willow was in operation producing electricity before the commission issued, in advance of the commission issuing a certificate for Cedar Hills.
Right.
So we were thinking, well, if the commission is looking to determine whether in this PCNN for Cedar Hills, they're trying to determine whether it's used and useful, and Diamond Willow is already in place, and every other resource that MDU has is already in place, we may be concluding that if we say Cedar Hills is useful, then so was the stuff that was put in place beforehand, which would include Diamond Willow.
I don't see how you could get to that. How it
walk me through that.
Yeah, walk me through, because I think that
I get it. I'm not. Yeah, I get
okay.
it.
I can see the. I don't recall looking at the whole system of everything and in a PCNN for other cases. We look at a specific, and you look at some of the ancillary things, but I don't see how it's all tied.
But you do look at it in the context of their entire generation fleet.
Yes.
And he's saying that their entire generation fleet includes Diamond Willow at the point we issued the PCNN. So we're determining that there's a necessity for Cedar Hills after Diamond Willow is already considered in the fleet. Is that, am I?
That's right. You're fine, and the fact that we didn't pay as strict attention to all these things at the time of the PCNN as we should have
right
is not a basis for saying it's irrelevant. It's huge, basically.
There was one other thing that we noticed, too, and I don't know that we've run this by Alana yet, but I looked at the application for PCNN for Cedar Hills, and it's as a reason the commission should grant PCNN for Cedar Hills, MDU says that there's a rebuttable presumption that it's built in North Dakota and therefore is prudent. And they offered that up as a reason why we should grant PCNN. So if that was, that's like saying.
They're opposite. They don't mesh at all.
It's sort of like saying.
It's almost asking.
We don't really have to think much about that other stuff.
Right.
We don't have to think much about the investment and how much it was, or whether it's useful.
They offered that in their application doesn't mean that's what we decided the case.
That's right, and the ADP law still requires this other
and
formula.
That's a conclusion we come to
prudence.
As well. Is that
yeah.
You can't just look at that, but I thought I'd throw it out there.
But you know, it's not irrelevant, but it's
yeah,
it's irrelevant.
Yeah, and the other one is, the first issue you had brought up is one we need to think about perhaps a little more. I mean, I get the point now, but at the same time, it seems to me there are other factors that come into play here, the first one being that Diamond Willow, it would seem, according to the record, was exclusively built from Montana. I mean, everything about it was from the decision to build there to the RFP. There's all these things that just point so strongly to that being forced into the model to meet Montana, period. To meet Montana's mandate, period.
I agree.
Whereas that same argument can't apply to Cedar Hills, I don't think, right?
No. I don't believe so.
I think both wind farms were forced into the model.
Well, that part.
Well, they were, yeah. No. But clearly Diamond Willow was
geographically forced as well.
Right. I mean, even the procurement of it was smelly.
Right. But it still was there,
a wind
part
resource
of the generation fleet at the time of the PCNN, where you weren't forced to do anything because there's no mandate, and you do the PCNN. I mean, I don't know. We've tried to think of all those other factors too.
Except, Alana, I would say though, and this is where I think maybe the objective is somewhat relevant, is that in order to meet our objective, which regardless of whether it's an objective or it's a mandate, it is, you know, for a utility, it would be, seem to me that it would be the interest of the public policy of the state of North Dakota to have wind. We couldn't consider Montana's because they were. It was being applied and attributed to them. So they would need, in order to get to the 10%, which is, if they believe that's the goal, the cause of the public policy, to meet public policy, then they needed more wind and they came to us. So to me, I think it is somewhat exclusive of the other. It can be considered exclusive of the other, of Diamond Willow. Is that totally irrational?
Is that like saying ours is state-specific?
What was it you and I came up with that day? You had something to that point. Of North Dakota, there's a, it was on your whiteboard. I remember we talked through it.
Is this about the presumption for in-state projects?
Yep.
Well, I mean, just it's something we had been talking about, whether or not one has to make an application before that presumption applies for a North Dakota project, or since it's in law, if it's so far as to say if a wind project is built or any energy generation project is built in North Dakota, whether that presumption exists of prudency. And put another way is if one were to allow, or if we were to allow Cedar Hills but disallow Diamond Willow, what we could say is that, well, Cedar Hills, because of that requirement under ADP, we were essentially, that was part of our reasoning behind that. However, that's not the case for Diamond Willow.
And that's my whole rationale last work session for why I think Cedar Hills is going to be a tough one to argue against, but Diamond Willow doesn't fit into the same category. But my point is that the credits follow, they don't get to be considered in both states. And if Diamond Willow's credits are allocated to Montana, then in order for MDU or Montana Dakota to meet their 10% objective in North Dakota, they have to consider something else. And so it wouldn't be illogical to give a PCNN exclusive of consideration of other wind in the fleet. That's why, because we're right? I mean, that's our struggle, is that, that why the PCNN after...
Well, that's a good way to look at it, because it does lead... I mean, it logically fits together with how Montana itself is treating the wrecks coming from Diamond Willow. And I guess, well, I mean, from Cedar Hills. Right now, are they all going to Montana?
Well, that's a really...
Diamond Willow. But it does tie together in that... I mean, Montana's position, or MDU's position, I guess, is... Well, right now we're allocating all the credits to Montana. But if you decide that, you know, 70% should go to North Dakota, we understand that, da-da-da-da. But you could also look at it as saying, no, I mean, you've chosen how to allocate it, and it was based on that this thing is being built for Montana, period. Right. I mean, it's...
Right.
I mean, the choice was made up front. You decided to take all the credits for Montana, and then... indicates what this was being built for and who it's used and useful for.
Right. Proves our point.
Let me switch gears.
My point.
For the argument side the other way. Advocacy staff wants none of those costs to be allowed for the wind. They said none of it. There was no good way to prove that they needed any of it. So you're telling me that there is no basis in that legal argument? Because I've heard a lot from the legal saying that we got to give them something.
Well, if you separate them out, then it creates problems.
But that so what about that? I mean, give me your viewpoints there, because the other side, the advocacy staff said, no, they didn't go through any modeling. They just built it. It was not the lowest cost alternative. What if we say none of that wind? I mean, do you agree with that legal argument? What's your thoughts on that? Because I'm hearing more of the other side right now.
Oh, believe me, I've struggled with that because it.
The presumption of prudence is just such a sticker from.
So that's the part that's got.
The PCNN is the part that's got it.
Yeah.
The PCNN is the simplest, the clearest basis for allowing par. I mean, unless you want to somehow write an order that is reversing some
so
or all of the PCNN.
You say that point negates the advocacy staff's argument.
On Cedar Hills.
On Cedar Hills.
Okay.
Wait, so that's your legal recommendation.
And then it kind of overflows a little to this discussion we're having about Diamond Willow and is it distinguishable, because it was in existence. Okay. And then.
Is that a question you can ask back to advocacy staff saying the commission has looked at this and we think this sees us a different way and see what their response is to
you
that?
You can ask both parties to respond further to questions that you might have.
But do we have any questions we're asking today that aren't covered in the briefs?
No, not that I've heard just yet, unless Commissioner Kalk was going somewhere I could quite get. But the presumption of prudence, if you want to go there, and there's certain implications of doing that, just once you do that, once you say there's a presumption of prudence for something built in North Dakota in a non-ADP case, then that's where you are with that presumption forevermore. I don't. There's some good, some reasons why you might want to, but
so
you have the PCNN, so I don't think you need to.
The advocacy staff's testimony refuted what you just said.
The advocacy staff did not refute the Cedar Hills. You have the PCNN.
There's nothing in there that refuted that point.
Okay, but when you get to what is the investment valued at,
yep.
What then you have the advocacy staff position that there's not enough information, which is why we struggled for some time in this discussion with your discussion from the last meeting where you said it's obvious that Cedar Hills is allowed and the dollar figures are what MDU says they are. You either have a question about the dollar figures or you don't. I don't know that that question is different for Cedar Hills or Diamond Willow.
Right.
That's
I get that.
One of the issues that we were bringing out here today as you slowly work through this excruciating outline. I mean, that's what you need to be thinking about, okay?
Let's talk for a second then about the presumption of prudence in an ADP, post-ADP, for a post-prudency. Because that was another legal question. Does the presumption still apply if the prudence is requested as part of a rate case rather than in advance?
I would say no. That's the narrowest application. So that's kind of without anything else to base it on, that's what I would argue because it's the narrowest application of that law. The people that want the presumption are arguing for the broadest. And it doesn't really matter how you end up deciding, but whatever you decide, it will be that.
That way forever.
Unless you decide to reverse yourself.
Well, let me tell you why I think I'm comfortable deciding the narrowest. Because everybody else has brought these things to us in advance. They've taken advantage of... I don't know why that... I mean, that's just the way we've done it until this point. And now when it hasn't been done, it's a little bit concerning. Is that fair? Or is that even accurate?
It raises flags to me. Why would we do something different?
I spent some time this morning going through the Otter Tail request for prudence. And all three of their cases were wind farms in North Dakota. And in all three cases, they asked for advanced determination of prudence.
Yes. And has not XL done the same with?
I didn't actually check that out for
Maricourt,
sure.
Maricourt? I believe they have.
Yep.
Which creates another problem for me, but we'll worry about that later. That's why I think that, Ilana, we haven't set a precedent yet. Different than the one that...
I agree with you. We have on whether the presumption applies
mm-hmm.
in something else.
Right.
I agree with you. But likewise, the narrowest perception of that law, it is not mandatory. I mean, I don't really think you can read much into the fact that they didn't come in and apply.
I think we
their
had decided
this
at our last work session.
We did.
Basically decided that...
It'd be tough to prove anyway.
We just need to write the order in such a way that we're making clear mm-hmm. that we are not using that argument of a broad
right.
interpretation of prudence
right.
to get to the point that we're saying Cedar Hills is prudent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we heard
yeah,
you.
That's right.
It's just that it's so circular when you start to say to yourself, then what basis can I go back to now to disallow one and not the other?
Sure.
Then you come back to, well, maybe the presumption is a basis. So it's we understand mm-hmm. what you said, but in working through it, we're trying to think of basis. Now, part of the potential basis for treating the two differently, if you can overcome the timing, are some of the things in this attachment. And that's yes. why we put them there.
Yep.
Okay? And again, they're not like clear controlling, okay, do it this way. Is there enough merit there? Is there enough convincing logical to you?
Yeah. I thought it was logical, and I also appreciate the fact that it's the same company as long, you know, the previous case that you referenced.
Yeah. I mean clearly the IRP language is pretty strong.
Yeah, it is.
To my knowledge, ever been overturned, and I guess if it has been overturned, the company's welcome to tell us about it. I don't think so. The timing of the filing has been changed, but and then the Big Stone is very interesting. So
it is. It was pretty thoroughly discussed and debated, but I'm not sure how I felt about it all. The context of everything. I know. It is good stuff.
That language about least cost
is not unclear. It's not unclear. And like I said, I don't, like you said, I guess it's never been overturned. I mean, has it even been challenged?
No, that case went up on appeal, but it went on other grounds. That case with the IRP went on appeal. It was even a supplemental order, but from the commission because it was remanded, but it was over the timing. The timing of new rates and retroactive rate making, but not the IRP part. As best I can tell from a quick read.
Mm-hmm.
you know, back to the okay, the used part we know, the useful part we sort of know, and there are some arguments why you can call Diamond Willow useful or not useful, but when you get back to the numbers, then you're free, you cannot pick a portion.
Right.
That's the things you're reading where we don't have evidence to pick a portion. Yes,
right.
It's half, yes, it's three quarters, whatever. And you do have to think about the evidence of the numbers that you think MDU presented and whether it's credible and whether you believe it. But if you decide that it isn't, then you probably, you can deny, but you can also dismiss in the sense that you can say, go bring me the numbers in a way that,
well, I mean, then maybe just the best way to deal with it is you just disallow, you figure out what the costs are for each, you disallow all of one and allow all of the other. Is that?
That's
the simple version.
But
you're nervous
basis.
About, yeah,
legal,
you're nervous, I know.
Basis for the all of one.
All of Cedar Hills, if that's
yeah, if we don't use prudence, which I don't hope we don't use.
No.
Presumption of prudence. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So if you're boiling it down to that, the basis would be.
I like, yeah. I mean, we can, so in other words, we dismiss Cedar Hills until we have a bit more information. Diamond Willow.
Dismiss both.
But tomorrow, yeah.
See,
I know.
The hardest part of this case is the one wind farm versus the other. Treating them differently, I think. I don't know. These guys.
I know
it's not for you, but.
I know.
Mark, tell me again the argument that we had that day about you could make a better argument for the wind farm that was built in North Dakota based on, I don't remember exactly what you said, that would help sell the North Dakota wind farm.
I was, you know, and I'm hoping that I remember this correctly, but I think if you look at the
question that him and I had,
it's the very last sentence of the ADP statute where it says there is a rebuttable presumption if a facility is located within North Dakota, which of course is part of the application process for an ADP. And obviously the distinction, one of the distinctions between Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow is that Cedar Hills was built in North Dakota and Diamond Willow was in Montana. So one could argue and say, well, I believe this is where we're going, is that the PCNN was granted because of that presumption. I mean, that's the beginning and the end of Cedar Hills. Why, even though that Cedar Hills was built after Diamond Willow.
It's a solution. It's just.
Yeah, I'm just thinking out of the box, throwing it out there. But I believe that was our discussion.
Yeah.
But what's wrong with that?
Well, because
it's precedent.
It's probably the wrong interpretation of the law. I mean, your simple law school, I mean, if the legislature wanted a presumption in the general rate making law for things built in North Dakota, it's in there for advance. When you come in early, okay? You come in early, you're building in North Dakota, everybody's encouraging this building and getting approval and da-da-da-da. If they wanted it in general rate making, it would have been over in general rate making. And that's the standard. That's my opinion.
Well, but that's the way the law reads. That's right. That's whether that was their intent in their
subsection, then it applies to that subsection, not to the whole chapter.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard enough to
read. It could be that we could be on appeal and the Supreme Court could be telling us differently, and there could be a whole bunch of reasons why. But that would be my initial legal analysis. But it is the nicest, neatest little distinction between the two wind farms. And that's
all the CPCN stuff.
Yeah. But then you'd have to be living with it. I mean, you're going to be living with it, period. And I think it's the wrong thing to do.
I agree.
Living with it means that in the future, if you have a rate case and they have a renewable resource that's part of the investment.
Any resource.
It's not just renewable.
You just allow it.
Yeah.
You don't talk about it.
You don't judge prudent.
It's presumed prudent.
Or valuation, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe although what happens in practice, what happens then is the CPCN case becomes the ADP case.
It does. It becomes the prudence case.
Which.
That's where I'm going anyway, as long as I'm still
here. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's not. Maybe you end up in the same spot anyway, because I think we're going to start looking at CPCN as an ADP anyway, just because of.
I guess the. If there's not a legal argument to how you can separate the two, which you're telling me now you don't have a good one, then they both go forward.
See, I disagree with this point. I disagree with this point because I think there is a differentiating factor, and the differentiating factor is that Diamond Willow was built for Montana, not as part of an integrated resource plan. It was part of a Montana resource plan, clearly, specifically attested to, testified to. Tons of evidence of support. So to me, all the other stuff aside, that's like Montana said, we'll pay for all of this. This is our law. We're paying for all of this.
Okay, I don't disagree with that, but give me the legal backup of what Commissioner Kramer just said that holds. Other than just that's what the commissioners.
You just say it the way he said it as a factual decision.
You could just as easily say, if a court says, no, you can't separate those out, you need to, take a look at this again, Commission. The court's not going to decide that for you. Then we could kick both of them out and say, okay. I mean, in that case, they are tied together, and neither one is.
Exactly.
Has met the burden of prudency.
I like that idea.
Well, I don't know that you'd kick out that Cedar Hills, but you can say neither one has the dollars. See, this is the, to me, if you're past prudency, then you have to be worried about did they prove the dollars or not.
Right.
And you get past prudency with a PCNN for Cedar Hills, and you get not past it with what Commissioner Kramer is saying for the other one.
I mean, I think Kevin's is, it's a logical argument.
No question about it.
Okay. Yeah. Kevin.
Well, I think that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best way of putting it. That was a Montana resource plan. And that's why it wouldn't have been considered as part of the Cedar Hills CPCN.
considering it's nowhere in any of their IRPs, that's even more
right.
So well, you know, supported.
I mean, there's lots of reasons the commission might have issued a certificate of public convenience and necessity for Cedar Hills that wouldn't necessarily tie it to or have spoken to things that were already in plan, right? In fact, we didn't even necessarily need to know as part of that case what it wasn't an analysis of the rest of their system.
Mm-hmm.
So, what about valuation for Cedar Hills?
Somewhere
in the record, it must be
delineated
what they spent on Cedar Hills versus. I'm sure that's in there.
I'm thinking
off the top of my head, but
the fault. If you go, if you're thinking that if this gets kicked back, then you set them both aside. They would be set aside for valuation then. Both of them.
If you're allowing Cedar Hills, it's not going to be kickbackable, set asideable on the kickback from the Supreme Court. I mean, you're going to reverse yourself somehow based on what? I mean, if you're allowing Cedar Hills, you're allowing Cedar Hills. If you have a problem with the dollar amounts for Cedar Hills, we say that. We spell it out somehow. We don't know the dollar amount.
If we are comfortable, yeah, that's a good point, though. If we're comfortable denying Diamond Willow, because it's a Montana resource plan, and that's the reason. We come back to Cedar Hills, and now we ask for more information or dismiss until we have a better value and all of that. I'm pretty comfortable. But you're right. Once we do that, we no longer have, if the other one's kicked back, we no longer have the other argument. But I don't know how you'd preserve that anyway.
Well, you wouldn't. I mean,
as long as
I
you
didn't
allow
quite
any,
understand
any part
I
of
think
it.
I mean, I was thinking you could preserve it by, in this order, saying that we need to set aside Cedar Hills for evaluation, and then and dismiss Diamond Willow, and then if Diamond Willow comes back, you can still set aside Diamond Willow for evaluation.
So you wouldn't decide Cedar Hills?
No.
Really? No, we deny Diamond Willow and dismiss Cedar Hills. Is that the right terminology?
That way you preserve the valuation for Diamond Willow.
If it should be thrown back to
Yeah.
Is there a fatal flaw?
I don't know. It's not a bad idea. I mean, is this guaranteed to withstand appeal? I don't know. It's got a chance.
But is it guaranteed to be appealed?
Probably. But Mark needs the experience, so don't worry about it.
Well, I just find it amazing that they did not submit the breakout cost of those two and all the testimony that we received and all the paperwork they received. That leads back to the argument you heard the advocacy staff saying.
They,
I mean, those numbers got to be there somewhere.
They are.
Yeah, well, that's
so
narrow. The question is the overall.
Do you want to allow, if you take their number, you're allowing the full Cedar Hills?
100%,
or the full.
Yeah, or the allocation of 100%
yeah,
of what they
our
say is
share
the
of
cost.
100%.
I don't have a reason to say what they're telling us is not true for those numbers. I don't think there was ever a question about
but
the numbers weren't true. Their argument was they just didn't think it should
compared
be
to what, though? That's the question. The numbers compared
back
to what?
To the used and useful debate.
Well, it comes back to the
cost.
IRP question about the least cost alternative, and you would need to know the difference between this alternative chosen and the other
right.
alternatives.
The increment that it represents, yeah.
That's why this
it's so good.
Is such an important
yeah.
order.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
My
because
God,
it
they
does
must have had a lot of interveners in those days.
Well, Meyer Shark. because it does tie it to this idea of that
beautiful.
For this commission and this utility, they were expected to adhere to least cost planning principles through their IRP. And there's strong reason to believe in this case they did not. And now what do we do about that? I mean, it looks like with the PCNN that they're entitled to something out of Cedar Hills, but it's difficult for us to know what that should be, being that they didn't compare this to what the least cost resource would have been.
But we do know they made a case
for it. Or they could have come in front of us first and made an argument for why it made sense to depart from least cost planning principles, and they could have said, you know, that we need to diversify our portfolio, we see this coming or that coming, and I mean, there could be all kinds of reasons why it might have been the right thing to do, but knowing that they were under a mandate to provide a least cost plan and adhere to it.
Well, can we assume that this, 7.7 cents per kilowatt hour that Big Stone 2 represented was the least cost, and whatever these are, this aren't?
That would seem reasonable.
And that's the increment? Am I thinking too much, Pat?
No.
Sometimes I think.
Except we vacated the.
Yeah, right. Except they have a. Yeah.
No, but this ties out okay, though, because then we'd come up with something that would be in base rates. And then whatever came back, if they chose more, that's going to be a rider anyway. We already talked about wind being a rider in this case. We didn't.
They just have an opportunity to supplement the record and show us what lease cost would have been.
And that's what dismiss does, right?
And we fix the number after they build the case.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I like it.
Do you have that by Wednesday, Pat, for a meeting? Need a little more time?
A little bit more.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, should we move on to ROE?
The ROE discussion, though, was more about going forward how we want ROE. Right? It was to be instructive. That way we preserved it as an issue?
Yeah.
Or what? It wasn't to...
You had told us that the last time. We just were...
Yeah, no, I like... This is a great outline of the issue.
No, this is good.
Yeah. The ROE, I think, is more than adequate. But in the interest of the settlement, I think it's okay, especially considering the sharing mechanism that's there.
Yeah, I had no concerns there at all.
Six, cost of debt, again, settlement. Any reason not to?
No, and that's okay, cost of debt's kind of what it is.
Yeah, unless there's some question as to the prudency and how it was incurred.
But right.
Or that was capital structure is an issue.
Capital structure.
Rate of return is kind of the calculation.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Cost of debt, return on equity, and capital structure are the issues.
Right. Well, the capital structure works into the overall cost of debt.
Right.
Return, we didn't spend much time on that. Are we going forward? Is that a separate issue that I'm not remembering?
You had said we're not thrilled to death with settling it all the time.
Oh. So
that's the one that you wanted
in
there.
Yeah, okay.
This was more like...
This is like our...
Okay, okay.
Yeah, this is more like we just need a paragraph instructing utilities and staff that...
No more template assumptions, are we?
Right. I mean, this had to do with giving some instruction on the fact that we don't consider North Dakota to be an above-average risk state.
Oh, man.
And I mean, just sort of that particular line of
rationale and testimony was underwhelming in its. In
that was, in fact, use the word underwhelming if you would, if you could.
Or you could say not persuasive. Considering,
that's persuasive.
And then you can run through the laundry list of things that are in statute that significantly reduce the risk of associated with these companies that operate in North Dakota. Here we're speaking to more than just MDU.
Right, right.
Bonus and incentive compensation for employees. I think we wanted, we set this aside for just a bit for folks to think about it. Is that right?
Yeah, I had more questions about the board of directors.
You had told us it was within management's discretion. And
it was.
Only on the bonuses and incentives, yeah.
The board of directors was
a little more, yeah. But on bonus and incentive compensation, while I agree, and I don't know if it's how we state it, if it's necessary to state it, but we always want to preserve the right to see it, lest there be something way out of whack that just needs to be corrected, or that we feel needs to be corrected. So I don't. In other words, we don't want to just say that's management discretion. We don't ever consider that.
Yep. No, I think we say, if I remember my discussion last time, so I'm consistent. To me, the linkage is performance. If there becomes a utility performance issue that is related to how they've set up their compensation and incentive packages, that's when we would want to get involved. So if for some reason the way that they've set it up creates reliability problems, causes cost problems, causes service quality, I mean, there's some outcome that we're getting from the utility that is bad, and we can tie it to how they've structured their compensation package. That's, I think, where the link is. Otherwise, it's kind of like...
And we don't see that in this
case. We don't see that in this case.
Okay.
Yeah. Board of Directors expenses, any more thoughts on that?
I just, you know, maybe the advocacy staff says, you know, half of them are needed. And then when you look through it, I mean, how do you figure out what, I mean, that's their job, I get it, but I wasn't comfortable with that 100%. But then once again, how do you pare that back?
Well, 50% was arbitrary, but it was seemed like a reasonable 50%, I suspect. But I don't know. I don't know.
I like the idea of taking care of your workers and giving good pay and that performance-based. Board of Directors, I understand, have a lot of responsibility, but it seems like we're doing more of the Board of Directors' jobs these days. I'm serious.
No question.
I'm definite serious about that.
No, that's a good point.
You know, we're the ones deciding these things up in front, and I would like to see that I'm prepared back, but I don't exactly know how to get to that. They shouldn't be able to get whatever they ask for. That just sets the stage for future problems.
I guess my response is that this is one we didn't really dig into. We had it on the list last time, and you wanted more discussion, but we didn't look into the record as much in detail as we did some of the other things. So if we could beg for more time, that would be
good.
That'd be fine.
Did we find out on the record what the total Board of Directors compensation or expense is? I mean, so what portion are, I understand that, and there's a discussion about segmenting between.
$70,000 Board of Directors expenses is what's listed in.
Right, but that's not the total MDU Board of Directors expenses. I mean, this is some portion of
that. Because they.
Because how much is allocated to
Montana? How much is allocated to the
different lines of the parent company, if you will. That's not the right
right
term.
So what the argument is over is whether
it's fair.
The 100% is 100% of that which is allocated to the regulated utility company, right?
Well, I assume so.
I always assume that was the case. I don't know if we asked that in so many
I'm sure that's
words on the record. But.
And so what we're saying is that whatever that allocation is of that's Montana Dakota's to bear, 100% of that the MDU Resources Board, the allocation that represents it is appropriate. Is there some increment less than 100% that they that shouldn't be borne by the ratepayers?
The 100% is the $70,000.
Right.
The 100% that's allocated to MDU.
Which is whatever, 5% of MDU resources.
Right.
More costs, and I'm just, are being arbitrary.
About the 70,000, 100%.
I'm not at all concerned about, because I'm assuming that the 70,000 represents 100% of the allocation to Montana Dakota Utilities.
I mean,
but is that appropriate?
You're looking at the allocation to.
We just give away whatever that cost is, that it's okay for them to spend it.
I mean, 50-50 seems fair to me, honestly. It's like.
Yeah, I think much more digging than that could almost be not worth it, but.
Especially for the dollar value that's here. I mean, and maybe that is a little bit of the Goldilocks principle, but there is at least something in the record, and this really is a policy decision. I mean,
it is.
It's not. You're not picking numbers out of thin air. You're making a policy judgment that this is a shared expense, and both shareholders and ratepayers get benefit from it. And
precisely,
it would be difficult to figure out with any real precision whether it should be 50 or 75 one way, or 100 to one and 100 to another. And so it seems fair to both to split it 50-50.
Yep. I think it's clearly unfair to ratepayers to pay 100% of it.
Just as it would be unfair for shareholders to pay 100%.
Yes.
Does that mean that you gentlemen can support the 50% that the advocacy staff was?
We
just go with that and we're done with it?
Yeah, because 100% would be just, if 50% is wrong, 100% would be just as wrong too. Right, because you're making a decision.
That was my point about the last work session, is how did we... Hey, that's easy.
Okay. Okay. Rex, I believe that the way that we're going here, this is pretty easy, right? Montana gets 100% of Diamond Willow, and the Cedar Hills, it will just be jurisdictionally allocated because it's part of the...
IRP.
IRP.
As opposed to the Montana Resource Plan, as opposed to the MRP.
Now, if somehow these roll back around, that may change what you just said. If North Dakota ratepayers end up paying for some more of that other one, then those RECs should be adjusted accordingly, too. Just a what-if game there.
Oh, I think RECs is the...
It's a driving.
I think it's a driving determinant in terms of allocation all the way around. I mean, it only makes sense that the RECs would follow the benefits would follow the payer. So it certainly could be, but hopefully
not.
Our position prevails and all the way through.
What I get at is somehow if this turned out where North Dakota ratepayers had to pay more for these, then they would have to figure out how to meet Montana's RECs because these wouldn't go towards them. That's my point there. Right? It would fall. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 12, rate design.
So little anyway.
We have a few sub-issues here. We have the testimony from Steffes related to innovative and potentially cost-effective technologies. I think this would just be, if I'm correct, a paragraph which should be an admonition for MDU to continue to look at cost-effective technologies such as electrothermal storage devices and how they might be integrated into the system, so on and so forth. Customer charges, refresh my memory on what that referred to.
That's just the customer charge singular.
Oh.
You already said it was okay with you.
We're moving towards more cost-based rates.
Mm-hmm.
I might add a C on this, something that we had talked about, to continue to look at energy efficiency and implement where it's a least cost resource.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want just to say win.
I think I'd you have some language. Apprise the commission as to when, you know. The idea is that energy efficiency can be viewed as a resource as well and should be implemented when it is a least cost resource. When it's not, then that's something else. But which I assume they're doing anyway, so it's...
I assume
it's
so,
just
too.
Just to put it in...
Yep, as an admonition is a good idea.
Right. Anything else on rate design anyone wanted to add? Okay, future reporting. We're going to have them report on time of day pricing, more demand responsive pricing that they may be able to implement. And be working relatio, and we've talked about this previously.
There was one more, though, of the the accounting, the discussion that took place at the very end about there were some things that the advocacy staff recommended, and MDU said, yeah, we need to change our accounting practices, we need to do all these things, and everybody kind of agreed to do it, but nobody had any timelines or any deliverables. Is that something that we put in here?
I think that's B.
That's B where? It's working relationships
settlement.
And communications?
Yes, yeah.
Well, if that's what
that
means.
I thought it was, but it's in the settlement, though. We just want, you wanted the reporting, so it wasn't just left open. As well,
I think,
we understand.
Yeah, I think Brian was though looking for more sort of benchmarks.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. Because we could have the next rate case 2 years from now, nothing has happened. I mean, great, we agree to work and do things better, but some update back to the commission like we did for the metering thing. They come back at some point in time and tell us.
That's why we put it under future reporting, that they would have to come back and tell us. That's what we
so
meant by that.
What are you thinking for your time frame?
I don't know, care. Whatever you want. I mean, that's the only reason we put it in there is because you said you want them coming back and telling you.
Okay.
And whatever you want. You can put in whatever you want. Doesn't matter. To me. What's
six that? Once, twice a year the first year and one annually after that? I don't know. That's just a throwing something out there. When is it they do something with the accounting practices?
Well, I think we could make it a time specific. There's a little burden on the staff as well, but because of course they're the consulting firm that they use is to be mutually agreed upon. So, you know, if we set it for 6 months or whatever, 10 months or 12 months or whatever we think is right, I don't think that'd be so bad. Mm-hmm. We want to be reasonable and get through a legislative session and all that, but
6 months after the order is written. We voted on it, or whatever that might be.
At the very least, we can ask them to come and report to us, and
if they
need,
it's just a report.
Yeah, it's just a report. So if they need more time, but yeah, right?
Yeah, you just want the one in the order itself. Just want the one follow up, and then decide later on.
Well, I think that the settlement agreement outlines it quite nicely. We're just saying, report in 6 months status of all that. Is that what? So we aren't, a year from now, scratching our heads going, I wonder whatever became of that.
That's exactly
right. That's what you're wanting to guard against.
Going back to the rate design, we had at A and C, the innovative and energy efficient technologies and integrating them. Does that fall under the future reporting, I think? Or is it?
Oh.
Yeah, probably more so than
that's
rate design,
idea.
Yeah. Yeah, cost, yeah, they both, I think, cost-effective technologies and least cost energy efficiency both fall in there, I think.
I do appreciate that how far Montana, Dakota went on the whole customer charge issue, because it is such a hard one, mm-hmm. Public perception-wise and whatnot, and yet it's so good in terms of rate design and cost basis and cost-based rates and all that. So,
yep.
I appreciate that they did what they did.
There's one new issue that I forgot to mention last time, but that I'd like to have staff think about, maybe do some research, see if there's any good language that we may be able to copy from other states. That's, might be in some PER reports or something like that from different cases around the country, and that's the issue of pensions. And I think there's enough on the record where...
Well, you asked some good questions.
I mean, I had asked a number of questions on it, and I just forgot to follow up on it in our last workshop, and it's not really addressed in the briefs that I recall, and it wasn't something that advocacy staff necessarily picked up on. But this idea of pension bombs hitting regulated utility companies and what ratepayers may at some point in the future be asked to pick up with regard to that, I don't have the right language in front of me right now, but there may be other commissions who've spoken to this and have at least laid out an understanding for the company that, look, in the future, if something bad happens, here's what's going to be shareholder responsibility, here's what's going to be ratepayer responsibility, at least some principles that they set out. And I know MDU has made some moves to try to shore up their pension fund, but I think it's still a
ratepayers are still vulnerable.
I mean, from what I understand, and I don't know this to be fact, so this isn't something you can put in the case, but the two biggest holders of pension bombs that are out there are government and regulated utility yeah. companies. And it's because they're the two that have a captive rate base, either taxpayer or ratepayer, that's there to pick up the tab for them. And, I mean, they're like the only two entities in the country that are still doing defined benefit plans. Nobody else does, and there's a reason why. So if there's if a commission has spoken to that point, it might be useful to look at it and see if there's something we could add to.
But in theory, though, that's a great point. Today, there's some percentage of that's going to the investor-owned of the retirement, and some percentage is going to their shareholder. That's something that we could find out. And then the concern is that...
Well, right now, it's a regulatory asset, I think, right? I mean, it's as I understand it, and I'd have to look again and make sure that this is really how MDU's operates, but I think the general principle is with a regulated company, it's an expense, but it's an expense that's capitalized, and so they earn a return on it, and they put it into rate base, which is what a regulatory asset generally is. And so it's more than a sharing between shareholder and ratepayer. It's mm-hmm. it's almost like a part of rate base, although it's not really because it's not a rate base item.
That's some number based on your number of employees, and you could get to. The concern would be that when
concern is the thing that blows thing up, and there's this huge unfunded liability that they have to pay to past employees, and somebody comes calling and says, "Look,
right.
you said you'd pay for all this ratepayers, so pony up."
I'm a little confused about what you're thinking. You want in the order?
I am too.
Yeah,
that's why I'm just looking.
You want
for
some research?
If there's something out there that a commission has thought of a good way of providing guidance to the utility company on what our expectations are in the future with regard to pensions.
Okay.
I'd like to look at it. But I don't know if...
We'll look for some language because they've had no opportunity to do much. This might be one of the future. We want to look at this issue more specifically.
If that's all we're able to get out of it, that's...
Okay. It might be, but Tony did ask a lot of questions on this topic. I don't know.
I know, but not from a standpoint where they, they... could make their pitch of what they thought they wanted, and then you asked questions about it. I mean, I know you had the questions, but in order to make them do something,
right? And that's why I'm saying I don't know
appropriate
that
in this case. But
I don't know if we've got the record, or if to be able to make them do something, or if there is something to be done, what it is exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
But I understand that part.
Yeah.
We'll see what others are doing. I mean, others might have had it as issues in their case and then used wonderful language in the order, but we will look and see if we can find anything. It would
be good to know how exposed ratepayers really are. I mean, for all three of our utilities.
Then that's something you can do on a going forward that you ask them to tell you that.
And, maybe what comes out of this is a rulemaking.
Because right now it could be
where there's some sort of principle set up with regard to what the commission expects. What's that?
Maybe you want to have a workshop with the utilities.
I mean, we might. What may come out of the order is just, a forewarning that we're going to be doing something with regard to this particular issue. And maybe a rulemaking is it, and then it just applies across the board to our companies. But
don't go mess it up for all of us public employees now, Tony.
I'm already on defined.
Me too.
But your point, though, Tony, there's some percentage of rates right now that is going towards employee retirement. That's the number that they could come up with. We didn't ask that question, but that's right. So when that number gets to a certain point, is in my mind that trigger that what you're talking about, that shared responsibility. And that's what probably, if there's something out there like that, that would be very interesting. But that's where we'd go to, is what amount is unfair for a ratepayer to pay towards someone's retirement.
It's not so much what a ratepayer should pay. It's a matter of if there becomes a large unfunded liability, then what are you going to do about it? And what is this commission setting out as an expectation for the utility company, so that
it's not the number; it's the.
It's not that we're going to tell them how to run the their fund.
That makes sense.
Or their policy, but what it is saying in advance, if you get to a point where you're in a, however you define it, significant pension fund liability situation, or you're running a negative balance, then you know you're not going to expect to come to ratepayers and simply have this treated as it's always been treated. It's a matter of setting expectation.
Okay. That's a paragraph that could be put in there.
I didn't copy it this time.
Mark and Pat and Chris did.
I bet Mark will be on, or I bet Chris will be researching that before long. It's just my guess. Researching what others, if any other commissions have spoken to the topic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I go so far as to demand everything go to defined contribution. Although
no, but
but
yeah, but that, so much for using it all to invest in your own stock.
Right, but I mean, I think we can set out parameters under which ratepayers will be expected to pay for unfunded liabilities. Mm-hmm.
This is the most fun we've had with the case, isn't it?
Until the next
one. This is the first one we've had go down.
This is in full-blown rate case.
Full-blown rate case in one time.
Yeah. Where there's no, yeah, there was, there's kind of a
Otter Tail kind of basically settled.
Yeah, I guess we it did. The last MD one did. We had those gas cases.
So
Big Stone too.
Put this on schedule for another work session on Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
For your time.
Good job, you guys.
Yeah, good work putting this together.
Everything come through okay, Scott?
Yeah, no, sounded good.
Huh?
Sounded good? It was a little calm.